Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Motion picture, analyze the world, crush and hit ya, dominate scripture, wild black emperor, protecting your perimeter, rockin' too wild, pray Lord the minister, sober while I'm sticking ya, and roll a Dutch over Ithaca, shorty I've been ripping up for years now, goatee smile, on the prowl, my lifestyle, I better get my position now to blow you cats like trout, smooth criminal, from New York to Quebec, unbelievable respect, Plan X, 22 ways about the projects, but keep focus direct, wastelands on the quest, getting deeper than check, we all die, but who's next? Then we go again. My enemies, I keep friends. Cause when I want them, I got them and take them rock bottom. And rapid fire, it's you versus Aya. Hit man fire, blow the world like a live wire.
Cuban connected, flexing, wowing. Sipping Chris down by the gallon. Queen Stallion.
No doubt.
Ice down medallion. Ice down medallion. Cuban connected, flexing, wowing. Sipping John P by the gallon. Queen Stallion.
No doubt.
Ice down medallion.
Same shit, holding it down, my gun spit, crime I deal with, drive a 540 with 10, yo nice, hold a trip up on the hill in the brick, plus the golden kid, wisdom, knowledge, still living, understand what I'm giving, a wild life to live in while we all driven, we sell drugs, young black thugs, we take slugs, most invincible, getting money's the principle, every day's an interview, you know who, I'm talking to the best soldiers, laying on 45th, and cold and selling drugs to the moaning, swifter than my opponents, fuck around and catch a bonus, more love to Ryan Owens, when you died I wasn't holding, and ever since that day I walk around double toasting, with two hosters, wanted posters, bust whatever closest, I die like your man in the black Testarossa, plus don't give a fuck, I'm taking over.
My Cuban connection, flexing, wowing, sipping Chris down by the gallon, Queen Stallion,
no doubt,
Ice Down Medallion,
what's it all about,
Ice Down Medallion, Cuban connection, flexing, wowing, sipping John P by the gallon, Queen Stallion,
no doubt,
Ice Down Medallion.
Now pass the hand rock, investing 30 G's of stock, non-stop. Crystal popping, drop topping, while the feds watching. They on my back, keep me up like Al Pacino. Or Joe Pesci in casino. Take keys up, Palico. And transport state to state, living great. Bust around in Hellgate, can't escape. Money make, regulate. New York City, prime state. And bless the LP track to make an earthquake. Now wait, Desert Storm just like Kuwait. Watch Jake, can't go to jail with no cake. Cause when I come home, I got to live crazy straight.
My Cuban connected, flexing, wowing. Sipping Chris down by the gallon, Queen Stallion,
no doubt.
Ice Down Medallion,
what's it all about?
Ice Down Medallion, Cuban connection, flexing, wowing. Sipping John P by the gallon, Queen Stallion,
no doubt.
Ice Down Medallion,
what's it all about?
Ice Down Medallion.
Whoa, 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 wh
right there was possibly one of the flyest records ever made. What it do, man? This is your man, King Eric, the Media Assassin. You're now tuned in to episode 471 of Off the Cuff Radio, giving y'all the live and direct exclusive interviews and hardcore hip-hop show sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, sponsored by Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers Boutique, Da Vinci Clothing. And we got my host, T-Mac, Facts on the line. What's good, my man?
What's going on, man? It's Monday Nitro, doing it the right way all day, in the spirit of hip-hop. We're just blessed to be doing this again. And King, the gentleman we have on tonight, he is the other half of the tremendous tag team from Queens, because you know a couple weeks ago we had Mike Geronimo. As you said, when he dropped that track in 1997, it was definitely a part of that East Coast excellence, you know, repping the NY so fly, especially coming from Queens. He's one of the undisputed kings of it. And when you think about the name Royal Flush, you don't necessarily think about the winning hand in the card game more than the regalness of where he represents in Flushing, Queens. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the man, the legend, representing NY so fly, Royal Flush, welcome to Off the Cuff, man.
Yo.
What's
Yo,
up,
what
man?
Do, man?
What's good, fellas? What's going on? I'm trying to set this up in my car the right way.
Gosh, it's only royalty, Doug.
Yeah, we had to make sure we everything is lined up and on board,
right,
man. First of all, big shout out to Pittsburgh Pat for making this connection happen. He should be on shortly.
Absolutely.
But, man, I'm off the cuff radio, man. First of all, I got to salute you, man, because out here in the Carolinas, that one track right there, that made us young dudes want to go out to the mall and buy all the mall jewelry up, man.
That's dope. Respect that.
Man, look.
We
now
was out there like, that was the anthem for jewelry shopping right there, man. We was out there looking like Mr. T's out there.
Yes,
well, I mean, you know, for my generation, you know, the generation before me, they had Slick Rick. For my generation, you know, it was more, it wasn't too much jewelry. It was more like the change of clothes, like the army suits, the, you know. So it wasn't a lot of people doing the jewelry, so I kept it there. You know, I'm a jewelry head, so that's something I like to do. So, yeah, that was definitely a hot single for me.
Definitely, Flush. And, I mean, out here in Virginia, man, I mean, look, y'all kept it fly and frosty, you know what I'm saying, in terms of keeping it glistening. You know, we was listening. That track right there definitely, you know, and we, you know, when we think about Ice Down Medallions and we think about Worldwide, I mean, this was an introduction to, you know, what you would end up dropping, you know, Ghetto Millionaire, which was definitely one of the classics. You know, shout out to Source Magazine, shout out, you know, to XXL, you know, who was doing profiles with it. Obviously
yeah,
represent,
yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, obviously, you represent Flushing, Queens, you know, and, you know, we think about that borough in general. We think about yourself. We think about Mike Geronimo. We think about 50 Cent. We think about Ja Rule. We think about when we go to QB Houses, shout out to Black Poet and Comet, representing Screwball Radio, along with King.
That's true.
We think about, I mean, we think about
Capone
Lil.
Nori.
What up, man? Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, Capone and Nori. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so much history, so many names. And that's the short list of all the GOATs, you know, that come from y'all, where y'all rep, man. I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, how you got into the game, where it all started for you.
I mean, you know, I'm from Flushing, you know, and coming up, you know, music-wise in Flushing, the first time I really, really started getting to it was Large Professor, you know. He's from Flushing,
okay,
too.
Shout out, Extra P.
Yeah, yeah. Lars Professor from Florida. I mean, like, and then where Lars Professor lived, Mike Geronimo lived in that same little part. It's probably like a block away from here. It ain't far, right? We all in the same neighborhood. So, you know, I was mostly doing street stuff. So, call my uncle, baby. So when I was, I would come up to the block where Mike and them live. You know, people would call me to come up there. Or if Lars Professor was having a lot of people come up there, like if he was having, like, Bismarck used to come up there. He had that little Nautica Cat Quest van, and, you know, like, I used to come. So I used to just go through and just really, like, you know, just hold it down for Flushing, make sure everything was all right. But then when Mike came out, Mike Geronimo came out, and I was listening to the song, and I was like, Mike Geronimo. I said, Mike up the block. I said, yeah. So I played it for me. It was crazy. And then as I'm playing it, I walk to the store, and I bump into Mike Geronimo. So bumming to Mike Geronimo, Mike Geronimo's like, yo, I got a show or something this week. I said, cool, I'm going to come. He said, you know, Irvin always going to be there. But when it happened, when they got there, Irvin them didn't show, but his whole label was there. And then I got on stage to be a hype man, and we ain't never turned back from each other.
And it's dope to see Flush, to see especially, because you would end up being prominently featured on Mike's debut album, The Natural, which is, his was released in 95, you dropped in 97, within 2 years of each other, and both of you dropped Undisputed East Coast Classics. I mean, you know, King and myself, we always talk on the air lovingly and jokingly what we have called the old New York sound. I mean, that old New York. And there were just certain records during that time that just resonated. It just, yeah, man, the sound, I mean, the air was different. I mean, you think of skyscrapers, you think of the buildings, you think about the blocks, you think about the ball courts. I mean, you know, everything, yes.
Yeah, completely.
You know.
I mean, but you got to realize that when I went to the studio, my competition wasn't everybody. My competition was Nas, DMX. You know, like, I had to go in there and I had to sound better than Jadakiss. I had to sound better. Whoever was hot, you really had to be a rapper, Prodigy. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like just everybody's rapping now, so let me just sound like somebody and I get accepted. Before, I had to sound like myself and try to make better bars than the next man that's out and dope. You know how that shit felt going to the studio and listening to Illmatic and saying, what the fuck can I say now? You know what I'm saying? That's how songs came about. I was like, you know what? All right, Illmatic was dope, but ain't nobody doing jewelry. Like, I got to do something different. So I had to find Ice Down Medallions. You know, the L.A. Coast Beef, let me do Worldwide. I had to make music to fit what was going on at the time, not just to do music for my cousin that got a studio. You know, big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you look at it too, Flush, when you talk about, you know, how you were building your bars, I mean, especially when you were coming, you were, you know, descended from the pedigree of greats. Of course, Lars Professor, you know, he was in, already had a few years then, you know, under his belt, of course, starting with Main Source and then, you know, eventually, you know, going solo. You know, so we're talking about roughly from his debut 7 years ago, you know, 7 years in 1990, and then, you know, obviously, you know, from their debut, Breaking Adams, to where he drops his LP, which would end up getting released some years later. But when he dropped I Just Want to Chill, I believe that was, what, 95, 96?
Yeah, could have been 96. Wrap
yeah,
my hand around $100 bill,
so, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because that album would have come out until some years later. Thank God I got my hands on it. Shout out to FYE. So, when we talk about the jury game as well, we're seeing a resurgence in the jury, yeah, because we're seeing, of course, shout out to the Wu-Tang, around 95, we start seeing, you know, Raekwon with the Brolic, you know, Tarantula piece with the Cuban Links, you know, the Ice Cream video was where everybody was rocking. I mean, we see Nas just totally drop it on everybody with that cute piece. Oh my God! I remember remember the first time we saw that QB piece Nas had.
His call got dropped. So he gonna call back though.
Okay.
But yeah, man, that's when the Jewelry Gang was at peak right there, man.
Yeah, man, but I mean, you know, when you think about it, though, King, when we look at that era from the 90s, of course, and then Puffy, you know, I mean, how can we forget Big? You know, we can't forget the legendary B.I.G., Biggie Smalls, man, because Big was rocking some heavy shit. You know, I remember when he was rocking the two, you know, the Cubans with the two Jesus pieces, I mean, and a Rolex. I mean, this is where, you know, when we look at what Puff and Big did, and people will say what they want about Puff, but one thing I can say about Puff.
He's back on now.
Flush, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
He's back on.
Okay. Yeah, King and myself was just talking about all the jewelry that came out during that time. Yes, we were talking about the Nas piece, you know, when he dropped that QB joint with that big ass QB medallion and the Cuban, and we were like, oh shit! And then you come. And then you drop basically an anthem for all the chain rockers. I mean, did you realize how big that song was going to become?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I just knew something about the horns. I knew, like, it was going to stick out. I knew it wasn't going to be, like, you know, like being in a studio with, like, Alchemist and Havoc. It's kind of dark. That was like, bam, bam, bam. And I was like, if I could just talk my little swagger to that. Was crazy. So when we knocked it out, Capone had just went to jail. Capone from CNN, that's my first cousin. So he had just went to jail. And the producer was like, well, dude, you know the kid Nori? I said, you know, we're from Left Rack. You know, we know of each other. He was like, his voice on there would just be fantastic. And you know what I'm saying? So that's when Capone had called me from jail. And then, you know, we got into Nori's number. And then I had to meet Nori in the studio. And we chopped it up. And, you know, that's when that song came about.
Tell Nori I still want that Ed Gray California jersey if he still has it 25 years later. Tell him I still want that jersey.
That's crazy. I think I was just with him maybe like 2 months ago, and I think I asked for that jersey too. I just asked for that jersey.
That's a collector's item right there. You know what? If we bring that up and next time he do on Drink Champs, he got to at least wear the jersey on Drink Champs.
Yes, he
does. Yeah. Yeah, I don't care if you don't got it. You gotta go buy it. Tell somebody remake that shit.
Man, shout out to Nike. Shout out to Nike. If y'all listening, go back to making the jerseys the way y'all used to and from the years of 1997 to 2003. Go back to those jersey styles y'all had. So when you think about it, Flush, when you really got serious with it, who are some of your influences that really inspired you when you really was like, okay, I'm going to do this?
Me, like I said, when I was outside getting money, one thing I did was, like, we would be in my building and, you know, we'd get drunk and somebody would always beat on a glass, like make a beat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just talk about everything that happened, all the current events that happened in the hood. I'd be like, Shantae came in the lobby and got smacked. Two crackheads, the cops are coming back. You know, I would just, whatever I seen, I would think of things like, my nigga, you got to put that in words. You got to put it in words. So, you know, I mean, that's how, you know, once I went to the studio with Mike Girano, if y'all hear the Natural album, if he got 14 songs on him, I'm on like 12.
Yeah.
It's a hook. Well, it's not like I'm like, so you know what I mean? So that's when I was every day. How we did the Natural album was whatever we was feeling that day. From Everything Has Changed. We was in the studio, I was like, yo, I'm fine. Fuck, I'll be getting money. And that's how the hook came about, you know? Like, we just had, that was an everyday movement. Then after that, I knew how to do it. You know what I mean? Then I was ready for my own shit.
Your verse on Everything Changes, I mean, that verse on Everything Changes, I mean, that last part said, I wish it happened to me because losing you is a tragedy. I mean, God. I mean, dude,
what you think about Queens rappers is that y'all have a unique way of just saying stuff. And it can just sound regular to the regular Joe, but the way y'all say it, it just sounds so fly.
Hell yeah, you got me. But you know how Queens is. We always try to think of our own words, gun language, this one. You know what I mean? That's just it. But you know, and then, you know, coming from Queens, like me, I wasn't like, I listened to one type of music, you know what I mean? Like, I could sit there and listen to the NWA and then listen to Native Tongue, you know, Tribe Called Quest. You know what I mean? I could, and that's how I put my music together, man. Like, I could listen to the hard shit and then listen to the hip-hop shit and put it all together and make it make sense. You know what I'm saying? So I was like a common sense and a DMX, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then throw my swagger with
him. Yeah. Plus, I don't know if you remember this from years back on Facebook because we're friends up there. That dude that sent you that picture with that Ghetto Millionaire cassette and that Street Ball CD, that was me.
Oh, I still got a copy of it. God damn it. Okay.
That was me.
Yeah, I took a copy of that picture. That was very, very dope because I don't have it.
Say what?
Oh man, I don't have that shit. Somebody gonna get it for me. I'm gonna tell somebody. That's why I need a copy of my first album.
Man, I mean,
we gonna have a hustle and flow moment right here. The only difference is,
well,
Flush ain't like Ludacris character. He's a humble guy.
I remember going up to Atlanta, man. And Ludacris was the host of the radio station, you know what I mean? Ludacris did my interview, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow. It was Chris Love the Lover. Oh, man. What was it like?
I mean, it was just crazy. Like, me, I didn't care. Like, I was just that rapper that I have $500,000 worth of jewelry on, and I go to any hood, and I just didn't care. You know what I'm saying? But so when I went up to Ludacris, I was out in Atlanta bugging out, and I didn't realize that later on that was the guy that interviewed me.
Yeah, because you figured that would have been like that was because he dropped his Incognito album. That was about maybe 98, 99 because then he would come out in 2001 with Back for the First Time. So
yeah. You
know, this is roughly about 3 or 4 years before he really becomes like really known to the hip hop. It's crazy how all y'all history intertwines. You know, Capone is your first cousin. You're interviewing Chris Lover Lover before he becomes Ludacris. You know, you're already coming from Queens. So in terms of when you're actually, you know, going about getting your record deal to release what would become Ghetto Millionaire, what was the process like for you in terms of, you know, how that business was, you know, taken care of?
I mean, the bad part, it wasn't no business for us, man. It was something new. That's why a lot of probably my generation be like, yo, how this guy coming out? These niggas got cars and money, because we set the platform for them for it to be a lot easier. You know what I mean? So you can't really hate on that. But it wasn't that. Like me music was my getaway from the streets. Music was like my release time to get away from the drug dealing and the crimes and the shootings and all that. So that was my great adventures. You know, I wish I had the mentality that instead of wanting to go to great adventures, how to buy great adventures. That's where my smartness should have came in. But like I said, I was just happy to be away from the streets. So, you know, we were just happy to be in music. So we didn't really take it as serious. That's probably why a lot of, you know, my generation don't have the foundation if they're not a Jay-Z or someone that kept pushing, you know, someone that was an underground artist. Not too many of us made it. It was that factor there that we was coming from shit and happy to be on planes. You know what I mean?
Right. What do a lot of the heads got to understand about that history? Because we know about King and myself, we're children of the culture. King is an accomplished journalist. I have literally every Source magazine from 1994 and every XXL from 1997. I'm going to shoot you a surprise later on from one of those joints, which I guess I'll just say, which won't be a surprise. I think you'll appreciate your 1997 feature that you did in Source Magazine when they profiled you. I still have it.
Words. I need that too. It's crazy because and my label, wait. What is this? I think the one everybody, the first half mic, and then the copies after that have four mics. That's why I was like, damn, but yeah, that's dope.
Yeah, man.
That's dope.
But I think also, yeah. But I think for what it is, too, is There's been a lot of consternation, controversy about what was going on the source. We all know the story. We're not going to get into it here. We've talked about it so much already. But one thing about it is, even if the source at the time was considered the barometer of how dope you were. Yeah, it was. Like King said. And even the source had to come back in 2001 when they had to re-rate, when they reappraised some of the albums that they didn't give just credit to or they didn't review, and had to give them the five mics for what the achievements were and the accomplishments, the contributions to the culture. Your album was a classic from 1997, hands down. It's on the same level as Wu-Tang Forever. It's on the same level as, of course, you know, Biggie's Life After Death. You know, it's right up Component Noriega's The War Report. It's up there with all of that. You know, it's up there with Buster's going. You know,
it's a rounded album, man. It ain't just Shoot 'Em Up. It tells you Hard Times, Still Came Home with Shine, Family Problems. You know, I gave a message of the world. Like I said, my album, whatever was going on in the world, that's what I normally talked about.
This is going. Hello.
Devin King, we still got him on?
Yeah, he's still on the line. Hey, you on, bro?
Okay, just make it clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay,
back.
We got him.
Damn, yeah.
Family Problems. Family Problems was the closing track off of the first side of your of Ghetto Millionaire. And when I first heard that that string section with the dings in it, and then you really go into that whole story, that was just something you vividly portrayed. Something that all too much a lot of heads in the hood go through. And I think you perfectly captured that picture. The narrative of it was so powerful. It was so riveting. It was so engaging. Probably out of that album, probably one of my favorite three tracks on that album. All of them were dope.
Oh,
definitely my top three for what I was really enjoying. What was the inspiration behind that?
I can say maybe 50% of it's true on my part.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, the other half is just reality of people I know that went through that shit like that. You know what I mean? Like I said, I went through that situation, but my father's still alive. But you know what I mean? You know, I mean, I did something to him, but, you know, he's still alive. You know, and that story was true. Because of the fact that I'm talking about my mother going through it, but I didn't wild out on him until he hit my brother.
Right.
And literally, you know what I mean?
About that
in
the beginning of it. Right.
Once you hit my little brother in the face, that's it. Now I'm going to get something to hurt you, you know? So that's where that came about. Like a lot of the shit on my album is definitely true stories. Definitely.
Definitely. And I mean, when you look at it, what was it like in terms of the production? Oh, go ahead, King. Go ahead.
Yeah, I will say is that with the Ghetto Millionaire album, it showed a lot of diversity. It showed different sizes of coin. Because at that time, you either had to be too far left or you had to be too far right.
Yes.
You found that balance. It still made it sound dope. That's what made that album stand out to me.
Yeah, and I took a lot of old samples. I mean, just the title of the album alone is Ghetto Millionaire. That don't mean I got $1 million in the ghetto. I'm just treated like a millionaire. When the ice cream truck pull up, all the kids come to me. When they go to the store and I tell them, give me something from the store, they know to keep the change. You know, that's what made me, you know, when they had park jams and stuff like that, I funded it. The basketball teams, I funded it. So that's what made me a ghetto millionaire, not because I had $1 million. It was just because I was a ghetto millionaire.
And you had that respect like a millionaire, you know. You had $1 million worth of, you know, game, respect, you know, and fame. You know, you was made before the record.
Absolutely.
The production on that album was immaculate. Shout out to Buck Wild, LES, and so many others. What was it like getting
Beat
all
Miners.
Of them? Yeah, Beat Miners. What was it like in terms of getting all of them together for when it was time to do the album?
I mean, during that time, remember, a lot of them producers, they worked with Mike Geronimo for his album, and I was on so many songs. And they was fucking hot. Like, you got to be from Buck Wild or EZLP at that time, man. I was like, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, D-I-C-C, all of that, yeah.
Or, and then to go and grab the Beat Miners, and they out with Smith and Wesson and Duck Down. It was no... I found every sound. And even all them guys, like even when you listen to Nas' album, you listen to L.E.S., you really hear like a old sample. Remember, L.E.S. did worldwide for me. That don't sound nothing like L.E.S. does. So every producer, I pick something different from everything they do.
And shout out to L.E.S., man. A good friend of mine. I'm down here in Virginia.
Yes.
Great guy. Tremendous talent. One of the most realest individuals, man. So
hey,
I think
we got Pat on the line too.
Pat, you here with us?
Yeah. What's happening? What's happening, Royal Flush? What's up, man?
What's going on with you? How are you?
Man, I'm good. I'm the one that booked you, man. Pittsburgh, Pat. Sorry, I was running a little late, man. If you can, we should take care of it. Thanks for coming on the show, man. How y'all doing?
We're better late than never, baby. We're here.
Yeah.
So I'm rolling up again, so we're doing right timing.
That's what's up. Go ahead. You were talking, man. Go ahead.
Yeah. But I was just saying, like, I mean, so Flush, when did you realize that the album was really beginning to take off in terms of, like, you know, you're really getting notoriety?
When I first did like Moving On Your Weed Production, when I threw that out. But first I threw out like Rotten Apple. And Rotten Apple was like, I couldn't get the sample clear because it was a church sample. But that was like,
okay.
That was something different that hip hop artists like me wasn't doing. Like talking, you know, giving a little soft side to shit that how you feel with things you go through. Everybody was just so tough. Everybody throw your guns in the air. Everybody wanted to smack you. Nobody really just showed that side. So that's when I came out. That was cool. And then once I seen like the snooping them with the LA, this in New York, and I wasn't really mad. So when they did that, then I had went by the studio when Tragedy and them was doing the LA,
right?
And I was like, to me, I wasn't mad at LA because I'm like them. When it's on, it's on. I'll come and step on your building. I don't give a fuck. I was mad at Biggie. So my whole worldwide song had nothing to do with L.A. I was talking about, you're just a boy, you're not bad enough, bad boy, shot with no evidence. Like, I was just talking about the whole bad boy, the whole Biggie. So I wasn't shitting on nothing with L.A. That's why when I went to L.A., while the song was out, they actually were singing the shit with me.
Wow, and I don't think nobody's ever heard that story before in full. Flush, did we just get an exclusive with that one?
Yes. I mean, but now when you go back and listen to the rhyming, I'm like, holy shit, New York, New Big, coming from Queens, where we don't get caught up in between. I was just saying, keep your mind on Queens. Like, I don't give a fuck what nobody else doing, but us niggas in Queens, we do not do that. We're not allowing that. And that's all that was.
Queens has always been live though, man. Like, Queens has always been like I'm from Pennsylvania, but like I've been in New York a lot. I've been locked up and shit, so I've been locked up with New York dudes, and hip hop and just all around. Like, Queens has always kind of just been like, I mean, of course it's New York, but it's always been its own world though. Like, Queens won't just go along with the flow. They're their own place. You know what I'm saying? Like, Queens is its own world. It's Queens, man.
That's why
it gets a lot of hate at the same time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, yeah. I mean, for real, I mean, I even know this. Like, I know the whole, the jail shit, the Riker shit, the Queens. Like, when people say that shit, see, when I say that, he knows what I'm talking about. That's how strong Queens is, though, that people had to team up against Queens. You know what I'm saying? That's how Queens has always been. They're just, it's its own world. So, you know, people, like, you know, they make enemies. You know what I'm saying? But you don't want to go to war with Queens either. They're strong, you know?
Nah, you know, we have morals. Like we have morals. You know what I mean? That and we stick by them. Like when you hear a lot of like snitching, and all, you don't really hear too much Queens and shit like that. You know, like we respect the people that came before us. We respect the generations. And I gotta have beef with you, and you from Queens, and we locked up together. We ain't handle that shit when we get back to the streets. But right now, it's me and you against everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. See? Yeah. That Queens was the world shit, man. I'm telling you. I rock with Queens.
Y'all went direct.
It's their own world, bro. I'm telling you. Queens is their own world, man. They might be one of the five boroughs, man, but I'm telling you, Queens is its own place. And, like, you ain't going to tell Queens to fall in line and follow some shit that they don't want to follow. Like, no, they can sit their own way, man.
And you
seen that even in hip-hop history, man. Like, even with, like, Destroy and Rebuild by Nas and shit. Like that shit, yeah, of course, it was Nas and it was on a huge album and everything, but that shit kind of stayed within, like, Queens, though. Like, Queens. Like,
yeah. That's true facts. I didn't think about it. You're right.
Made a lot of noise, but if you think about it, like, you know, it pretty much got handled by Queens people. Like, Queens MCs handled that. Like,
yeah.
I put Mike on the spot, man. I need your top five from Queens, man.
You know how great it was, though? It was a little easy for me coming up with Mike Geronimo. At one point in time, Mike Geronimo was, like, bigger than Nas. Nas, Mike was a sex symbol, the rap encore. Like, he was just shit. World, like, yeah. So that, it was a lot easy, man. Like, I was in the studios when DMX came through for the first time, and Jay-Z wasn't really nobody, and they getting on songs with us. Word, like, Mike was it, man. If we just had the right label, we'd probably been out of here, but besides that, he made my life.
Yeah. Is that what did it? Was just the wrong label, like, you know, wrong place and time? Because,
the wrong label, because they didn't know how to balance it, too. It was like, at the time, even if music's going, like, they didn't want to shoot the video for Ice Down Medallions. I paid for that out of my pocket.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's just at that point, they was too pretty with it. And Wu-Tang and them, everybody was coming out gritty, and that's why the Puff song came about. When the label gave Puff $100,000 for the song, and then they didn't really have much more to do my motherfucking album, I was like, oh, man, this shit ain't going to work.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that I got to understand about those days, too, man. It's just a lot of people were dope. The wrong people being the gatekeepers, and a lot of people that were in charge of things didn't even really understand what they had, didn't understand the culture. And just,
I'm not sure.
If they didn't really fuck with you, then you just weren't going nowhere. Like, you know what I mean? And so it was just like a, you know, if they didn't like what you brought to them, they're just like, nope. And your video wasn't coming out. They weren't paying for this. And, you know, a lot of great, great talent got mixed, you know, got lost in the sauce, man. You know what I mean? Just because somebody has no idea what hip-hop even means or... I don't even understand these words you're using, and I don't like how he came in here like that. And, you know, one bad meeting could just mean your career. They're not going to fuck with you. You know?
Yeah, the other guy is just there, no sir. And then you got to remember who the fuck's your A&R. Somebody that probably don't even be in the streets listening to your fucking type of music.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, what is it, you know, Jizza spoke about that on the end of Protect Your Neck.
Protect
you know, first
neck.
Of all, who's A&R? You know, Mountain Climber who plays an electric guitar, but he don't know the meaning of dope when he's looking for a two-time rap that's cleaner than the bar soap. And I'm the dirtiest thing in sight. You know what I mean?
That was a lie.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the music is one thing, Flush. Coming from the street, because we got to give our audience, especially our younger audience, a history lesson. What was it really like during that time on the block back in those days, like from the, you know, early 90s through your era, you know, through the 2000s?
Music-wise, street-wise?
Both.
I mean, street-wise, I said it was more of it was more of a respect level. It wasn't nobody stepping on your toes. If you made it to be who you was, then you was, you know, everybody around you was holding you down for that. So yeah, street-wise, I always was doing good. I never really let jail time, and you know, stop me. I never really got in trouble that much. I always knew how to cut out before things happened. You know, I was strategic, man. I already know what my day is scheduled for the next week. You know what I'm saying? Like, I premeditate everything that happens before it happens. You know what I mean? When I wake up, I already know what my whole itinerary, you know. So I try to live like that. And if there's something I don't like, I usually just I don't fuck with it. If something just say, nah, something don't go, all right, fuck it, I ain't going. You know, if two things happen before I get to a destination, I turn around. You know, that's just my morals with it. As far as like hip hop was, I always had that character where I knew I was gonna always be something. You know, if you sit and you watch the Kanye West shit on Netflix, if you look at it, that shit is dope.
I'm about to watch it tonight.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's early. You don't see nothing yet. You don't see he it don't start even yet. But you can just see how determined he was when he knew he was gonna be something. I was caught up in, am I gonna be that person in the streets or in hip hop? That's probably why I was stuck at a 50-50 balance with both of them, and I didn't the way I was supposed to be in hip hop because I was still deciding, do I want the street life or the hip hop life?
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This is a good follow-up question then, because there's something going on right now. It's been in the news, and this ties in it goes a little far back. For a long time, we've been hearing that New York has lost its style in hip-hop, like New York isn't New York anymore, and then we see a lot of the new New York guys that blow up are the drill rappers that are influenced by, like, the Chicago scene and all that. And now you see the new mayors with rappers talking about banning drill music and stuff. So, like, what's your opinions on that? I hate to make you the ambassador for New York hip-hop, but just what's your thoughts on all this going on now?
Shit, I listen to rock and roll, goddammit. Drill music ain't got something. A lot of shit rocking. Let me let you listen to some heavy metal shit. I think that in my generation, man, like, I used to have guys that was able to shoot and stay on the block and wild out. And when they wanted to do things for me, I had jobs for them. Whether they came out with me and they was holding the records, whether they was holding the posters, whether they was putting up my stickers, whether they was coming on for me and dropping out and giving somebody my postcard. So I gave them jobs. I think that these new rappers that come out, the people that's around them don't have no way to show them that they want to be qualified to get money with them, so they think, but try to shoot a nigga, that's how you're going to get that artist's motherfucking eye. You know what I'm saying? Instead of a nigga be like, you know what, man, that nigga get on the phone and call the radio stations every day. I want him. So niggas don't give no jobs, man. So that's all the hood do. You got one famous nigga and 30 broke niggas and 10 of them are shooters. What's going to happen at every show?
Somebody's gonna get shot.
Yeah, somebody gonna get shot, man. You came there to better your career. They didn't come there with that. They came there to how they better their friendship. You know what I'm saying?
Nigga, I'm
trying to show you my friendship, and somebody stepped on. Who stepped on your sneakers? I'm killing a nigga for you. What sneaker you stepped on? You know what I'm saying? You don't have no jobs, man.
But I mean, Flush, you broke that down because, you know, King, Pat, myself, we've talked about this on air and off air about how you have to be careful with the people you bring into your circle, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of times when we look at the business of how things have happened with a lot of people over the years in the industry, a lot of people don't necessarily know how to separate the street from their business, because after you become a rapper in terms of really making it, that's where your job is primarily. You are an artist. It is a business. You treat it as such. And you only handle the street shit if it's really something you have to go there with, but preferably you try to stay away from it. And some of these artists, they just actively invite the drama. You know, and drill music, I've said this on air, we're all children of this culture. I'm never going to be one to ban any type of hip-hop ever, but I will say that in certain levels, because when we think about the era you came up in, when we first heard you, Flush, it was a balance of everything. You know, we still had groups, you know, I mean, you know, it was, we had R&B groups. You know, we had you know what I'm saying? You know, we had Missy doing her thing. You know, Aaliyah was still alive. You know, go ahead.
I played Missy. No, and I said, and I played Missy in my car, and it was accepted. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, I was able to listen to Nas and then listen to De La Soul, and the same right after each other. You know, it was just different. But, you know, and also when I came out my generation, when I had to go do something, half the time I couldn't bring no niggas because I got the radio rep, the A&R, two people from the label. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of niggas couldn't really go out with a lot of people now. Not as much to bring. Like if I went up to Hot 97, it'd be two people from my record label and one friend. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it was in my generation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ice-T said it best one time when he talked about how a lot of these beasts and these problems start because it's not necessarily the artists themselves. It's the individuals that send their crew. They usually get into it with somebody else, and that's where the drama starts off. You know, which once again, you have to be careful who you bring around with you. Now, Flush. You may not think you remember this, but I do, because while we're talking about banning rap music, you appeared in somebody's very, very famous video of a remix, of a remake, when Dionne Warwick did What the World Needs Now is Love, and you happened to be in that video along with Veronica. Yes, Flush, I remember. Because you was rocking.
Yes, hell yeah.
How did that come about?
I think Dionne Warwick's son, he did beats, something like that, and they was doing like a We Are the World song right now for hip hop. So they had went and got like you know, they went and got Tyrese. It was mad people on it, Kane. I think it was mad people on it. And when I went down there, I went with Mike Mount, and then I'm down there and Bobby Brown's on it. But I went down there, and I had $1 million chain on. So
yeah,
they looked at me like I was already. So they looked at me like I was already famous. So after Mike got out the booth, they said, "Yugo." I said, "Oh, okay." So I went there and I just laid like six bars and I was fucking. I was on a song. All right. That was it. We went to Good Morning America. We went on a roll with that shit.
Oh wow! What was that like, man?
Wow.
Because you know. For Dionne Warwick, she's always going to be respected as an artist. Of course, her, C. Dolores Tucker, rest in peace.
Yes.
You know, of course, Melba Moore as well. You know, they were all part of that coalition to, you know, during that time in the early 90s, you know, about how destructive rap music was along with, you know, Calvin Butt. You know, this is during the time where we're seeing, you know, this uprising against what is considered, you know, sexist, misogynistic music. Shout out, of course, man, you know, to Aunt Maxine Waters, Councilwoman, you know, California, you know, because she really took a stand for us to speak on behalf of the hip-hop nation when she said, these are our children, these are my children. We need to listen to them in terms of what's going on. And to see Dionne make that turn where she really began to embrace the culture, how big was that for all of you realizing, like, yo, this is like music royalty and she accepts us now?
For me, because I think, you know, like I said, it was Mike on it, but, you know, they had Barbie, they had Tyrese, they had a couple mad people. But I was like the only real, Corrupt, I think, was on it. Maybe me and Corrupt could have been like the only real, like, street part of that. Where it worked, like we went to like a lot of hoods, and when we did the songs, a lot of people came out. Like I was the first one to start giving out clothes and shit like that, so it kind of worked. It started a lot of rappers. Like now, instead of being scared going places, I go to the hood, I give out free white tees, I give out, you know, free shit. So it.
But King, that is with us still?
Yeah, we still with us. Just call that guy drop. He gonna call back.
Okay.
Yeah, his line seemed kind of weak and shit for a minute. I kept hearing like some loud static and shit.
Yeah,
he's probably going to another part and
Yeah, but definitely, Pat, it's just great to have you with us as always. What's been going on with you, man?
Man, just chilling. Thanks for holding it down for it, man. I had kind of a hectic evening, man. I had my niece and shit, you know, so
okay.
Thanks for holding it down for me.
So I was Mike. Everything was all right?
Yeah, you good, man.
Yeah, you back on.
Yeah, we're good.
All right, I'm back on.
Yeah.
So y'all did Mike's interview last week?
Yeah, we did that two weeks ago.
Okay.
That's my boy. You got him. I said, man, we can't have Mike Geronimo without reaching out to Royal Plus, man. You know,
man.
I fuck with both of y'all heavy, man. You can't tell either one of your stories without each other, man. For me, like, I follow hip hop, man. I love New York. New York and New Orleans are my two favorite spots in hip hop. And it, you know, to me, all you guys are stars, man. I don't give a fuck about what record sales and all that shit. Like, I don't care about none of that. Like, I really fuck with this shit. Like,
and then,
you know,
a lot of people gotta realize, like, I did songs with like the best. I got songs with everybody, man. It was at one point, like, if you was doing an album, it was like, all right, cool, you talking about drugs in the street? You got to go get flush. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm on a lot of people's shit. But, man, yeah, man, I done did songs with Mac 10. I done did songs with E-40, man, Twista. There's not really nobody you really can't name, man. Sean, I got an album coming out with Sean Price next month that nobody never heard these lyrics.
Oh man. We didn't know Sean had a lot of unreleased content, man, because he had an album out with Killer G.
Price.
Wow.
Yeah, he got all kinds of stuff, man. I know his wife. I talked to his wife, Bernadette, and, I actually was going to have her for an interview and on my old show. I ended up leaving that show and stuff, so I never made it happen. But, yeah, he had that album with Lil' Fame, with M.O.P., and I was trying to set something up to get an interview with them. Like I said, I just moved on from that show, but she's like, man, he said, don't worry, you'll have another opportunity because we got mad stuff. Like, we got mad stuff that he recorded and stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of songs like music left. You have to think there is. I mean, the dude has so much music out there that, like,
rest in peace. But the last year before he went, I was with him every day. We in the studio every day. You know what I'm saying?
And that's impressive because Sean Price doesn't like rappers. You know what I'm saying? So if you're friends with Sean Price, you're an ill dude. Sean Price don't like people. LG taught me that.
I will part two interview. I tell stories about some of the people I did songs with because they're crazy.
Hell yeah, man.
Stay left.
Hell yeah,
LG
taught me that about Sean, man. LG told me that about Sean Price. Like, anybody that had a good relationship with Sean Price, he really rocked with you then because he didn't like people. And, like, that might be why he might not have reached the full potential of his career as far as opportunities and stuff, because he just didn't really like that part of the game. He didn't like the fake smiling and handshake shit, you know? Like, he didn't want to dance for you. Like, he wasn't feeling you.
Yeah.
He wasn't feeling you. So the people you've seen around him, he really rocked with him. So, you know.
Imagine doing an album with him.
He's truly one of the greats, man. He really is. And that's not a one of those, you know, oh, he passed away, so people elevate him. But no, man. Like, Sean Trey's like, listen to him, man. Like,
yeah, go through his catalog. People, go through Sean Price catalog for a little while.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. It really is. Like, it's incredible.
That Helter Skelter album was, you know, when, you know, I mean, of course, LaFleur LaFleur, Scorch Guy, you know, the Fab Five, you know, of course, when they actually dropped, you know, Nocturnal. I mean, it was just, when you look at the game, because you mentioned earlier, Flush, about some of the collabs you did, and when you talked about, you know, some of those collabs, those came off of the ODB album, you know, the Osiris and the Trials and Tribulations of Russell Jones. What was your relationship with him?
Well, when he first came home, man, they had him on, you know, they had him on that Medicine, man, you know, that was kind of, you know how that shit could be, man, you know, when you go on the crazy shit, the shit they give you to calm you down, that shit was fucking him up. And when he came home, he still was Old Dirty Bastard, and his managers was managing me at the time. So when he came home, he had just signed a Rockefeller, and I heard him sitting there when Swiss was doing a beat, and he was writing it, but you know, you seen it, so I'm just sitting here saying shit.
Hello? Dang, we got him still, or did the call drop?
It dropped, but he gonna call back, though. Come on, Blog Talk. Get it together, man. Get it together.
Right in the middle of an ODB story. Dang.
I know, right, Pat?
Think the power going out in the Super Bowl, man. Like, shit.
He's back on right now. He's back on right now.
So, boom. So,
okay. Flush, go ahead.
Yeah. You got to finish that.
Right, so, where I was at? I'm in the studio.
You're talking about ODB when you were in the writing sessions with him.
Yeah.
Right. So, boom, I'm in the studio with Swiss. I see him writing. And as he's writing, he's getting stuck on certain words. So, I'm saying shit. Bang, bang, bang. And I could hear him listening to me and not really listen to the beat. So I was like, let me see if he's really writing it. So I look over, he's writing it. So now he's writing something else. He writes like two more lines that I already know. Boom. So I wrote some more. Boom. I'm saying in my head. Then he was like, yo, come over here for a minute. He's like, yo, sit down with me. So we sat down from there, and I wrote the whole album, all of them, everything.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah. From He did a song called "Where's Your Money?" I think with Busta Rhymes. When he first came home,
mm-hmm.
I wrote that. Yeah, I wrote that one. So, I mean, but it wasn't like me taking me wrote. I wrote for Old Dirty Bastard. First of all, it's like being an actor. I had to turn into Old Dirty Bastard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It wasn't giving him Flush lyrics. I had to give him Old Dirty Bastard. You know, shit like he do. So we sat there together. It's not like I went in and did the songs and he had to hear it and lay him over. No, every song he did together, we was right there together and wrote it together. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
But, yeah, man, I had to be him, man. So I had to get into character. So I never take away that man's credit because there's only one Old Dirty Bastard in this world.
Definitely.
And that was a friend that nobody could duplicate.
And he was a genius.
I hate when people were like, when we talk about like the greats of him, and like sometimes I just feel like there's a lot of people like that. If you weren't, some things you just kind of had to witness for yourself to understand why it was so special.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And like, I can't really like put an Old Dirty Bastard record on for someone that doesn't understand who he is and explain to him why it's dope. Like.
Exactly.
You either get him or you don't, and it's just maybe he's just for younger people. Maybe they just don't get like what Old Dirty was, but for us that like lived
well,
through
well,
it
and
like
some,
he was so unique.
And our generation, we've seen the grind. We've seen nowadays. I turn on the TV, I got to look at my kids and be like, "Who's that? The fuck they got a Ferrari? What song they made?" Like Old Dirty Bastard,
yeah.
We watch him get a deal and still go to welfare. You know, we watch that whole man's life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like me, and everybody I did a song with, I went to the studio. Nobody sent me a track, Pro Tools, and I did my verse and sent it back.
Yeah.
Never in my generation.
That's something that like I truly miss in hip hop is like when you seen somebody was on somebody's album.
like, it kind of, like, made you feel good that, like, oh, these two dudes must really fuck with each other, because you kind of understood that they had to hang out with each other to do it. But now, like, I can get a fucking a verse from Jadakiss tomorrow and put them on a song with The Game, and, like, they never even knew they were going to be on a song together, and it just doesn't seem genuine to me anymore. Like, when people say, oh, I got a song dropping tomorrow with this dude, and it's like, it was PayPal him some money and he spit some generic shit for it. Like, it just doesn't even, like, count to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? But, like, you heard certain, you heard the chemistry between people and how it worked. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you understood that. Like, when you heard certain sounds, like, damn, man, those two just sound ill together, you know?
Because sometimes, like, a lot of times I went to the studio and we had a beat that we were supposed to do. But once me and that artist started vibing, we did something completely different.
Right.
You know, and that's how it's supposed to be.
You know, and that's the thing we missed at the time, y'all, like Pat just so beautifully stated. Because when we look at the videos back in the day, when we look at the features, like Jodeci, Love You For Life, when we saw T-Boz up in it. I mean, it was like, yo, shot the scene. You know, it's like when we saw the Akinyele, the Bomb video, when we saw Kool G Rap up in it. You know, it was like, you know, it made
it was
sense.
A big deal.
It's like, yo, you know, I mean, it just really, any collaborations during that time, it really, really, like when Allure did Head Over Heels and they had Nas rapping on it, it really
That
fit.
Was crazy. Yeah.
You know, and it's like Pat said, it's like now it's so generic, it's so convoluted, it's so contrived, it's non-authentic.
And I think what we're talking about, though, is the difference is between if I need a verse from somebody now, I message them and tell them what kind of, like, what the song is about, and they rap.
Right.
Those songs that we're talking about that are legendary collaborations and shit, we don't even know what the original meaning of the original ideas were. Those songs might have come from a vibe that they got off of each other. And
right.
Like,
right.
Oh, that's, you know, just something they ended up feeling. They were going through beats and like, oh, I like how this one is. And you know what I mean? Like, they could have had a different idea of what they were going to do, but once they got together and vibe together, something else could have came of it. That's not going to happen today in a lot of situations because, like I said, hey, I'm doing a song about coke. You know, here's your PayPal. Send the verses over.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But like, if we were hanging out and kicking it, we might have, like, you know, we might smoke and some funny shit could happen in the studio and we start laughing and shit. And now we're,
that's,
you know, now we're going to make a high energy type of club record or something, or, like, you know, a fun record. Or, you know, we might have, like, a bad day or some shit, and, right, you know, maybe going through something, and now we're vibing off each other and make, you know, a darker song or something. Like, they're not playing off of each other's vibes. You're just telling them what to rap about, and they just rap some bullshit, generic verse about whatever. And it's just like, that's why a lot of these collabs don't fucking work. Like, a lot of collabs happen, and you forget they even happened. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing special
right.
about it anymore. Like, I don't know, man. All the shit, you know, all these rappers breaking records, buzz, streaming and shit, and it's like, yeah, man, like, I'm smart enough to know back in 1996, your single can't go platinum if you didn't make it a single. How are you supposed to judge how many times I played a song in my bedroom, dude? You know what I mean? I don't know how many times I listened to that track 8, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, if I released The Infamous today, every song would be number one. You know what I mean? But, like,
sure,
didn't release all the singles back then. Like,
look
it's
at
a
it like this.
Time,
the metrics have been manipulated because just like Pat said, like, how these guys are doing millions and thousands of streams and they're just clicking on that video like 50 to 100 times. Whereas
before
the metrics is different because you knew who was
different. Like, of course Drake is breaking all the records. Like, of course he is. Because, like, when Jay put out the blueprint, like, every song couldn't go number one because there's only so many songs that he releases as a single. So you can't go number one for your whole album, but now you can. So, of course, Drake has more singles than and, you know, more shit on the charts than everybody else because every song you can measure how many times people listen to it. You can't do that with old albums. You don't know how many times people listen to track 12.
because they didn't release that as a single. You know what I mean? Like, that's why the message is just not fair to match up. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to even compare those two eras.
Definitely.
You know, every song can go platinum now, and you can't do that back in the day. You could have your platinum single and then your platinum album, and that's it. You couldn't have 16 songs go, you know, go platinum. It's well impossible.
Definitely. Flush, when you look at the business now and then in terms of promotion and how artists are signed and the collaborations put together, how do you see it different from what it was from today, from what it was in the time you were coming up with?
I mean, I guess the main thing is like y'all was saying, the vibe, man. I gotta before I can do a song with a person, I gotta vibe with them. That's just mandatory. I mean, nowadays, I guess it's good. I mean, and when I came out, you had songs like, listen to Eye for Eye. That wasn't a single. That was way at the end of the album. You know what I'm saying? The other shit with Wu-Tang and Nas. Like Came a Good and Go. Like, that shit wasn't a single. Your features wasn't even what made you. Those were just like the icing on the cake. You didn't use them singles to make your album.
Yeah. You pretty much used the singles to get the attention of all the people that aren't really your fans. That's pretty much what you did.
Remixes. That was it. Remix. We had remixes.
Yeah. Dude. Your real fans weren't, they didn't even care about your single. Like, where it's like, we just saw the single, and we're like, all right, cool. Like, that was for everybody else. Your real fans are skipping that song when they buy the album. They don't even care about that shit because that wasn't for them. We want, you know, we want the track that nobody's talking about. That's where the real shit's at.
When y'all talk about remixes, and I got to throw this in there because when we talk about collaborations and remixes, I got to throw this in right quick. Last year when we had Steel from Smith & Wesson on it, he told us that hilarious story about how they had to, you know, how they went, you know, to the Staten
Island,
get
Raekwon.
You know, with Raekwon. Yeah, for the Black Trunk, before they did the Black Trunk joint.
Uh-huh.
And then also, too, when we talk about remixes, when we think about the Wu-Tang joint, where it was on the Jodeci Freaking You remix, where you had Raekwon and Ghostface on that joint, we were like, where did this come from? But it was dope.
How'd y'all put that together?
Oh, my
bro, that was a crazy one.
Yeah.
It was a lot of crazy collabos during that time. And it was special, too, just like when they had the All Eyes on Me with Tupac, Method Man, Red Man, and the Dog Pound.
Yeah, when they did Got My Mind Made Up.
Word.
Yeah. I was like, how'd they get all these? And had a Spectre Deck on the original.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite shits, too.
That was when I remember
what?
The first time
in they all was in the studio.
The radio. Yeah, I remember the first time when because we got to get to this too, Flush, about, because we're going to get your thoughts about how the radio plays music now. But when I first heard that on the radio back in 1996, late fall of 1996, and I heard that, I was like, because we knew about the beat at the time with the East and West Coast. When we heard that, it was like, that was kind of like one of the truces that was coming. And we heard it, and we were like, you got those dudes up there, and you're rhyming like that? It's like, how did this happen? Like, who made that? It was a beautiful moment to hear all of them like that.
We had to make Wait
sure.
Yeah, we was making sure. We had to make sure nothing was going to transpire.
Right,
that's why I was like, uh-oh.
No, I'm still right here. I'm still grooving.
Hey, I heard some noise. I was like, is that the feds?
Yeah, we heard Shorty in the background. We was like, okay, this ain't cool.
I was like, it's the feds. I was like, we ain't talking to nothing deep. We ain't talking about UFOs or nothing.
We talking to that moment of silence.
We talking hip hop.
But we reminisce.
That's it.
Good old days, man.
The days we missed, man. Oh, you were saying the radio station?
Yeah,
now?
about how the programming is, because back in the day, that's how we heard, you know, songs like Worldwide. You know, we would hear the deep cuts like What a Shame, you know, on your album. I mean, it was like that's how we were really introduced to a lot of it. And it's like the DJs back in the day, you had radio stations that were individually owned. Now it's all corporate. It's changed in terms of now these labels are given, which they're not supposed to be technically, but you know the radios are getting paid to play the stuff, and they're giving them a playlist, and that's what's getting played. And it's like the same five songs 20 times in an hour. It's like, man, I'm like, don't y'all have anything different to play? I'm like, shit. I'm like, this hip-hop is going around today. There's Griselda.
I think the radio stations back then played shit to make you love it. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you try this out.
Yeah.
I think now, whatever they say the world loves, that's what they gotta play. They gotta play whatever they think is whatever got the most. Like, how many followers he got? Play his music.
Right.
That's that better, man.
When I was growing up, the DJ on radio stations, if they was telling you something was dope, you went into it expecting it be good. Like,
we had such a Barbito, I swear to God, I was just about to say that.
We used to pick up their radio station. Me and my brother would stay up late as hell. It'd be like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we would pick up this college radio station. And we could hear Stretching Bobito. And, man, that shit was just, it blew my mind, like, the shit that you would hear on that. And I was so happy, like, years later that shit, like, is available now. You look at those dudes, when they played something, you would automatically believe that it was going to be good because you trusted in that. And what you just said is exactly right. These dudes don't even really care who's playing the song now. Like, nobody gives a shit about the DJs and who's hosting the shows and all that shit. It's just, this guy got followers. Check them out. You know what I'm saying? Like, we had a respect for the guys that, you know, like, we knew our DJs' names and shit. We knew who was the, you know, who had this show. I remember even as late as, like, the late 2000s and shit, like, Clinton Sparks had Smash Time Radio on in here in PA. And, like, we couldn't wait for that shit because we was hearing, like, mixtape joints and new shit that, you know, we wasn't going to hear it, you know, noon on the radio and stuff. I'm talking some jail shit. I was in jail. But, you know, we wasn't going to hear, like, the pop shit, the hit records. We was going to hear some, you know, real grimy shit. I remember hearing, like, Saigon and Pat Pudding shit, you know, Midnight and shit on Smash Time Radio for Clinton Sparks and shit. Nowadays, like, people don't even have that. They don't even have, there's nothing special like that for them. Like, they don't, and they don't want it either. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just, what's hot is hot. They don't want that special show. And I see, like, Yo MTV Raps is coming back and Rap City's Boss and all that. And it's like, that's cool, man, but not what we might even turn that shit on and like it, but nobody that grew up watching Yo MTV Raps is gonna relate what they see on that show to what we saw growing up. Nobody's gonna be Ed Lover and Dr. Dre. Like, the shit's just not gonna be special like it was to us, and we know that. And to me, it just speaks to a lack of creativity that they gotta jack the shit that was so special to us to try to do it again today. And these kids don't even want it. Like, they don't even want that. They don't, you know, they don't understand the relationship we had with our shit, because we had to be home at 5 o'clock to watch the shit, and if we weren't, we missed it. We couldn't watch it on our phones either. You know what I'm saying? So we really love the shit that we love. You know what I mean? Like, we had
That's
to
real,
cut out at a certain time. And, you know what I mean? Like, nowadays, like, someone drops their album on Friday, with one press of a button, I can listen to it on Sunday. Who gives a shit? But, like, you don't know, it's like cutting grass for 2 hours to get the money to get to the store to get it and all that. And by the time you do it, that album better be good, because if it ain't, I ain't never fucking with that rapper again, man. Because I had to work for that shit. You know what I mean? But now,
just throw whatever to the wall, whatever sticks, sticks. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, man. It's just different. That's why we like having guests like you on the show, man, because, like, when I think Mike Giannone and Mel Royal Plus, like, man, y'all mean something to me, man. Y'all, like, talking to you guys, man, like, it brings back, like, a different time, man. And, like, I hear some of you guys, like, some of your records, man, like, it might sound weird to you, man, but I think it's, like, wintertime sometimes. Because, like, I remember listening to your album and, like, walking to school in the snow and shit. And then, like, skipping school one day. Like, I specifically remember listening to Royal Flux and Mike Geronimo with my brother. He skipped school. It was, like, the first time we skipped school together. And then when my mom found out, and when we left, we usually always had, like, a backpack with, like, a bunch of CDs and tapes in it. And we listened to it on our headphones and shit. And we still got it. So we only had one CD, the ones we had in the CD player. And I don't remember which CD it was. It was either Mike Geronimo or Royal Flux. But we listened to that shit all day. And now when I go back and listen to that shit, like, it brings me back to that time. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that's what a lot of the music does for us, man. Like, those times were different. I mean, were special. And, like, I don't care about no platinum tracks, none of that shit, man. Like, you know, I just think it's appropriate now that we have this little platform here, man, that, you know, we extended to you guys, man, to let y'all know, like, what y'all really did for us, man. Like, we really do appreciate y'all. Like, no one else ever did. If the Grammys didn't, none of that shit, man. Like, my brother ain't here no more. Like, when I listen to your record, like, it brings back shit with my brother. It's just different than a song to me, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, I just like to, not like, we got this platform. I like to reach out to the people that means something to me, man. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it's deeper than rap, man. It really is. And, you know, to me, you're a legend, man, and to a lot of people, you are, bro. And, you know, I like to have that opportunity to tell you that, man. You know what I'm saying? It goes beyond just your skills and all that, man. Like, y'all really, you know, not just you and Mike Geronimo, there's a lot of you, but you guys really did a lot for us, man. It was more than just listening to your records, man. Like, y'all helped us do some shit. Y'all taught us how to move. Y'all taught us how to be men a lot of times, you know what I'm saying? Like, so that shit, you know, it's more than just a beat and some words y'all ran together, man, for real. Bless you. With us? You with us? Dang, your call got dropped. Are y'all there?
Yeah, you should call back.
Yeah.
Y'all okay. Get it right, Ball Talk. I'm going to be on y'all next tonight, man. Really.
But Pat, what you said was real, man, because it's like, you know, that era was special for us. And like you said, in terms of your own CD rap, what you said about it being back, coming back, I understand the spirit of it, but then part of it seems convoluted because it's like they're trying to cash in on nostalgia. And the thing is, number one, are they going to do it right? And number two, you know, because if they do it right, people are going to tune in. But it's like, will the younger generation really care about it? And that's the main thing, because it's special.
But here's the thing, man, and here's that's going to be hard for us to really understand. We live in a world where people our age that grew up in that shit, man, we got lives and shit, and we all, you know, a lot of us, like, are just living paycheck to paycheck. We don't have time. We're raising kids. We don't have time to buy everybody's shit, to listen to everything, watch everything. So a lot of times when they try to bring something back, it's only us that care. But a lot of us, like, a lot of the big percent of us, man, like, we don't got the time, money, and all that shit to really get behind anything. So, like, the shit with, like, Snoop Dogg buying Death Row, everyone's like, yeah, that's cool. 5 years from now, are we really going to, is that even going to matter? You know what I mean? Like, I hope so. But, like, what about a couple years ago when that Mount Westmore shit was happening? How often do we talk about that? We don't. We don't talk about it. Some people listen to it and don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about. When we see cool shit from our childhood, like, yeah, we all like it when it first happens, man, but, like, man, like, the younger generation doesn't give a shit about it, and that's where it hurts. And you've got to realize, like, back when this shit was special to us, like, 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds weren't buying this shit, and if they were, they were buying it for their kids. So, like, we're the adults now, man, and we're not spending money on that shit. Like, whether,
right.
no matter how much we like it, you know what I'm saying? And, like, the kids don't give a fuck. They don't care that it's fucking special to us. They don't care. And, like, so it's like, yeah, it's cool. But, like, they're doing stuff for us. You know, the people that grew up in the 90s and shit, it's cool that they're doing it. But it's like, what recreation from back then paid off? Like, what have they done that, like, that was a playoff of them, of something from back in the day that, you know, that we fuck with faithfully and that it's successful? Nothing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because everything is just so instant and shit. Like,
the nostalgia bag. And they,
what's
you don't
that?
Have the talent. The problem is they don't have the talent that to create those new memories. Like, what's the point of having a rap shit? The majority of these guys can't even rap.
Yeah, and, like, it's just the attention span of everybody, too, man. Like, look how fast everything comes and goes, man. Like, if people, like, somebody will put out a fucking good album and everyone's like, classic, classic, classic. But then by Monday, I ain't really talking about it no more. Remember how great Nas's albums were, the past couple ones? Put a gun to someone's head and said, name me 3 songs off those albums. Everybody will stutter and not know what the fuck to do. Because they listened to them for a weekend, and then Kanye West said something crazy, and we got in arguments on the internet about it all week. And we forgot to listen to it.
And
tell me I'm wrong.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
That's what happens every time. Like, look at it this way. Name me 5 crazy things that Donald Trump said. You fucking forget, because every day it was something different, and you just, your attention span just isn't where it was. And, like, that's with every little thing. They recreate an old movie. Like, how many lines do you remember from Coming to America Part 2? When that dropped, everybody
right.
liked it. Do we remember it?
No,
because we watched it.
No.
We thought it was cool. We talked about it for the weekend. Monday came, and, you know, LeBron scored 40, so it triggered the Jordan vs. LeBron debate. We argued about it, and then that died down. People got blocked, and this person blocked you on Facebook and used to be here, and then Kanye said something, and then Trump said something, and... You know, like, the world's just moving too fast. It, like, it's hard to make, and it's not a knock on anybody that's doing anything. It's just the consumer. That's just what the times are. Like, you know, before we had to like, listen to our favorite rappers or hear from them, we had to wait for them to be in a magazine or wait for them to be on a TV show. Now, we fucking see them eating breakfast and Instagram Live. We see everything, so, like, none of that shit's special anymore. Because you see them all the fucking time. You know what I mean? Like back in the day, the comedians, when they got to get on Letterman and Johnny Carson and shit, by the time they were on there, like, they had funny shit that they wanted to say. Now, they got 15-hour podcasts and shit, so it's like you see them not be funny. So, like, they're not even as good as you really think that they are because, like, you see too much of everything. And there's just so much out there. And it's just crazy. It's just hard for shit to sink in nowadays. So, like, the OMTVF is a good idea and everything, but, like, what is Rap City even still on? Does anybody even know?
I think that's off the air.
Like, it came back. I remember seeing, like, a Jeezy, something about Jeezy sitting on Rap City. That's what I'm talking about. We don't even know if it's on the air still. You know what I mean? But then we'll see videos to get 2 million likes and views and shit of somebody from 2005 spitting a freestyle and say, Rap City of the Basement needs to come back. And the motherfucker, it's been back. And it already got canceled. Or if it didn't, we don't even know if it's there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it's sad but true, but, like, there's nothing sinking into people. And, like, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not saying it's anybody's fault or, you know, anything like that. It's just, I believe there's just too much, and, you know, nothing special anymore. I mean, like, this rapper releasing something, you might not fuck with that album because you saw that dude do something corny on Instagram Live. So you just think he's a cornball now. Back in the day, man, we only seen these rappers when they were on TV on a rap show. And they were just acting like they were celebrities and all that shit. And like, they were superheroes to us. But now, you see them all the fucking time. You know what I mean? Like, no, I'm not going to lie. I'm guilty of it, too. Every time I see Bone Thugs and Harmony, I think of Busy Bone with a fucking musket talking to the Migos. And I can't take it serious now.
Hey, Jake, I'm the same way with Game. Every time I think of Game, I think of Whack 100 leaning his elbow. Like,
sure, don't get me started. I know exactly what you mean, man. So, like, back in the day, like, look at all these iconic moments we have from Tupac and shit. That's because we didn't see him every second of the fucking day. If we did, man, we probably would have seen Tupac doing something corny with his girlfriend and just think he's a sucker for love and fucking, like, he'd be canceled. Like, you know, that's a cool song, dude, but we know you're a pussy around your girlfriend. Like, that's how, like, people are nowadays. So, like, by the time you see something, like, you've seen too much of their lives and shit, to, like, and shit clouds your mind with more than what you should know them about. Like, you know, like, I don't know who, like, we're talking to Royal Flush, man. Who did he vote for in 1996? We don't fucking know. We don't fucking care. But now, we know all that shit. We know who you voted for. We know what your fucking diet is. We know what your girlfriend looks like. We know what kind of car you drive. We know all that shit. And it's just too much bullshit.
But, Pat, you got to think about it, too. You got to think about what's going on, y'all. Because back in the day, that time Flush was out there, you know, we were all younger. Hip-hop was really an exclusive fraternity, which was really based around the music itself and the magazine. You know, it was not a situation where it became a media. When social media, and we're not bashing social media on this show because social media has done great things for us. But when you're looking at how social media came into the game and once it really got corporate as it went along the evolution of the business, it became just that, a business. This became about not you selling the music, but you selling an image and a personality at a wider scale. That's like what you said, Pat, about why we're seeing more of them, because you got these people telling them you need to have the public know more about you as a person. And certain things, it's like this. Do we really know what Jay-Z and Beyonce, what they do as a family? No. And that's a good thing, because Jay-Z keeps his personal life just that, private. Do we really see what E-40 and his wife and, you know, what his kids are grown now? But do we really know, have to know about E-40's life? No, we don't. And that's okay. You know, do we need to know about GZ and his wife? No, and it's okay. And that's what some of these artists have to understand. Your life does not have to be out there in public all the time. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, like, bro, like how Eric just mentioned the game. Like, bro, in 2004, 2005, like, the game could do no wrong in my book. Like, he was great.
And we didn't know a lot about him at the time. We heard about him. I remember, I still got the XXL when they were profiling him. And this is when I heard about him. I hadn't heard any music yet. But I just saw the picture, and I was like, okay, so this is the dude that they're talking about. I wouldn't hear the music till a little bit later. But it was like there was still a mystery about him. You know what I'm saying? Because we didn't really know about it. Now at the time, we're like, gang, we're hearing too much about you now, and it's not good.
Yeah. And I mean, everything now, fucking, like, it's like nothing really, like, you know, like the XXL, for instance. All you pretty much, like, all they are now is, like, a media, like, gossip site, like, news site, you know what I mean? But that's all you get from them, and then once a year you get the freshman cover. And sometimes the freshman thing has worked for them, you know what I mean? And, like, sometimes they're right about the people they pick. But the putting stock in those people that they pick, that shit has gone down because they're only picking the people that already have the following and already, you know, they're not going to pick somebody that only has 1,000 followers on the cover. But like, when the freshman thing first was started, the people that they put on it were like, they already had like little regional followings and come up like, and it meant something. Let me read you. I was in jail when this came out, but I already knew a handful of these guys.
Break it down, Pat.
Here's the original freshman. Okay. Plies, and Rich Boy, and Gorilla Zoe. Okay.
I had that issue.
Okay. Saigon.
Papoose, I think, was on that too.
Papoose.
Mm-hmm.
Young Dro. Joel Ortiz.
Uh-huh.
Crooked Eye. Lupe Fiasco and Little Boozy. Now, all those guys, when you break them down one by one, majority of those guys have like a nice little following. They have a good history. And when you really look at the times that WSL football does on the cover, what all those artists were doing at that time, they were all a part of something that we still held as precious to us.
Right,
so you
regarded it as a good time in music. Right, absolutely right.
Yeah, Saigon, Papoose, and even Joel Ortiz, they were in the New York, you know, they were next in line. They were the new Nas and Jay and all that. Like, they were in that class. The mixtape, mid-2000 New York, still had that gritty sound to them. They were excited about Little Boosie. He was signed to Pimp C. He was from Louisiana. He had like a sound that reminded you of like the No Limit Cash Money type shit. It was, you know, under Pimp C. Cool, this dude's going to go on. Crooked Eye, he was on Death Row with Corrupt and Spider Loke and Left Eye and, you know, Petey Pablo, and he was part of Death Row and shit. And the West Coast, oh shit, we got a new West Coast guy from Death Row? Holy shit, you know what I mean? Lupe, he was the next Kanye. You know what I mean? And the Plies, Gorillaz, you know, at the time, like, I'm not going to front like I knew who they were really before that, because I really didn't. But Rich Boy, he had that and that shit was hard, bro. That shit was hard. So all of those guys, what you heard from them so far was exciting, but it was new. And for them to be on that cover, you're like, oh, sweet. Like, these dudes are going to go somewhere. They got the exposure of WSL. Now, you already have to be somewhere. You are, like, the WSL isn't getting you anywhere that you're not already at. You understand what I mean?
Right, right.
Like, you already have to get there for them to get you on that, on the, and like, I put the WXL needs the 10 freshmen. The 10 freshmen don't need the WXL anymore. If WXL stopped doing the freshman thing, they're done. All the freshman thing is now is just that freestyle. And guess what? Those rappers don't understand. WXL is 150 billion percent marketing that we're going to put this out so all the young kids see all their rappers and shit, but all the old heads get to laugh at this. And that's what they're doing.
And I got to say something about that. And I got to speak on that too, Pat, because I have every issue from when they first started in 1997, and you're absolutely right in terms of how it's changed, because as the marketing, as the journalism changed, their journalism has never been questioned. They do great journalism still.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a fan of how they do it now, because the problem is they've taken out a lot of the elements that made it great, from talking about so many different things, the world events, what was going on in this country itself in the hoods. And like you said, now it's really just become the latest magazine in terms of profiling a lot of artists, which is good because it's all hip-hop. But it's not really delving deep like it once did. And like you said, when you look at the freshman issues, which is like you're absolutely right, Pat. When you're looking at how they're known for the freshman issues, It's cool because it's always knowledge to know about who's coming next. And I think any knowledge is good. The problem is that a lot of these artists now that are coming, they're fleeting. A lot of these artists who they said was going to be the next ones, they haven't really fulfilled their potential. A couple did, but a lot of them, they haven't gotten to that next level like they thought they would.
Yeah,
you know?
And it really now it's just kind of everything is like, social media changed the game, and like for real, like I'm not gonna criticize the double because like it's hard to transfer with the times, and like for me to say, oh, they didn't do this or that right, who am I to say that? Like it's hard to make certain moves. You can't really predict how things are gonna go and all that. So like right now it seems like you got like the freshman cipher thing that they do every year, it's kind of like that's what they have. Like that's their staple there. Like that's their sports center. You know what I mean? And that's how they eat. That's how they live. You know what I mean? But like, in all reality, if they stop doing that, what's Double XL that Hip Hop DX ain't, and what Ambrosia for Hedge ain't? Like, it's just a hip hop site. That's all it is. So, like, they're kind of the only ones left that are actually doing something other than being a website. And like I said, they kind of need the freshmen. The freshmen don't really need them. That's not really doing anything for the freshmen. That's pretty much just putting their name back in the headline
for a week. It's on a brand.
Like, oh, if I do this, my name will be buzzing for that week. With the freestyles up and shit, you know what I mean? They're like, if they don't do it, it's cool. Like, they still have their following, and they'll just have to, you know, try to make a buzz in another week. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, who was last year's freshman? The one before? We don't remember that shit. We remember for, like, the week that it happens. Like, so it's just like, I don't know. As I said, I don't want to criticize any of them because...
No, Pat.
It's hard to predict
how,
like, what to do, you know? Like, if you
but
find
right.
something that works, for you, whatever. Like, if the freshman thing is all they got, it's still more than what a lot of places got because a lot of places don't have anything that attracts people once a year. Like, that's their Super Bowl is the freshman thing. And it's like, I'm not going to hate on them for it because, hey, man, at least they've got something. You know what I mean? Like,
well, the funny thing what you mentioned about the freshmen, the one thing you mentioned about the freshmen, Pat and King, is also, too, Benny, they asked Benny to be on it, and Jay-Z told him not to do it. Mm-hmm. And the more you say this, Pat, I think I understand why Jay told Benny not to do it.
Who was that?
You know, I understand it now. Because Benny...
part of it is... is why I said is because Double XL definitely knows that a large percentage of people that watch those freshman freestyles are there to make fun of those rappers. So
and you ain't gonna make fun of Benny the Butcher. He just
it's a bad look for him because like the audience that Benny caters to is us, is the older guys, the lyricism street guys.
Right.
If you lump them in with those guys. The people that haven't heard Benny yet are going to think that he's a mumble rapper, no matter how dope he is. They're going to think that of him because he's on the stage with these other people with blue and pink hair. So, like, I think that was a smart move telling him to skip that because he didn't need it. And, like I said, Double XL knows damn well that the fans of those rappers up there, they'll just be in the comments defending them. But they know a large percentage of the people watching them are there to make fun of them. Like, there's always that moment from when young guys, the old heads make fun of. This year it was Coi Leray, Banzino's daughter, twerking. She stopped halfway through a freestyle and started shaking her ass. All right. She's a little skinny, annoying broad. And, like, we all laughed at her. And she sucks. You know what I mean? Like, she can't rap for shit. Like,
King, I'm still laughing.
We watch it for that. We watch it to make fun of them.
Right.
You know?
at a dead silence.
So I guess it's smart move for Benny not to do that. Like, I don't want to see Benny on stage with those people, and that's a bad look for him. Like, you know, instead, look what Benny got. Benny got a verse from J. Cole that will go down as a great song. Like, that song's going to, it kind of sounds like J. Cole's dissing him on it. But I don't think he is. I don't know. Do you guys think did you guys hear the song?
I think that's more so competition there. They must,
do you think that Cole was subliminally dissing Benny?
I think there's a little jaw jacket in the comp. Like, you know, man, you can't go.
I think
it was a situation where Benny was pushing J. Cole, like, man, you ain't nice as you.
Yeah, and I think
part like that.
I mean, look, J. Cole's an intelligent dude. I think if he knows that he's going to spit a bar like that on that record, that people are going to take it like he's talking about Benny. So even if he wrote it not talking about Benny, he still, I think, was aware that people would take it like that, and he still spit it. So, like, there has to be a percentage of what he said it had to be about Benny. You know what I mean? And really, maybe that's what he was doing, because he thinks people that know real lyricists and shit, you know, we all fuck with Griselda. We all think those guys are dope. But we look at Benny as somebody that can actually be something, as far as, like, we don't think they just spitting, you know, coke raps on dope-ass beats is his career. Like, we expect him to be something. Benny is like a once-in-a-generation type of MC. So I think Cole spitting those bars was kind of like, hey, Benny, you're fucking dope. Like, we don't want 30 albums of coke raps, bro. Like, go deeper, because, like, you can, and you're that dope. Like, I think, for real, that's what I think J. Cole was kind of doing, was like, don't be that guy, Benny. Like, spread your wings a little bit. You know what I mean? Because, like, there is something special about Benny. He's one of the few people that has the whole package there, dude. You know what I mean? Like, you got the street cred, you got the talent, you got the look, you got all of it. You know what I mean? You got the respect, everything. So, like, don't just be the gritty dude that just raps on Alchemist beats and shit your whole career. Don't be that. Like, be, you know, something we never seen before, because that's what we think you are. You can be that. Like, he can be Nas. You know what I mean? Like Benny can definitely do that. Like, he's special, man.
I think from it with Benny is indeed a monster talent. All three of them are. The roster they have, of course, you know, of course, with Armani Caesar, and of course, Boldy James, you know, Fleet Lord.
Well, they lost Conway.
I mean, yeah.
Wait,
what do you mean they lost Conway?
He just announced yesterday or the day before. Did he pull up?
He left?
He left Shady. He left Griselda.
Yeah, Conway, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know this. Y'all just schooled me on something. What's going on with that?
Yeah,
hang
he
takes
the
free
agent.
He
left Griselda,
yeah.
And he left Shady.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Hold on, I'm pulling it up here. Yeah, okay. He left everywhere, man. He's kind of on his own. But, hey, call me crazy. Because I think there's a chance maybe he can go to Death Row.
Well, I mean, drum work, I know
that.
He's labeled drum work. I know with drum work, I know with his label, he's really concentrating on trying to build drum work. All three of them have their own label, and all three of them are tremendously talented. Conway is just unbelievable. I mean, Benny is special, but Conway is just, he's on another planet. I mean, some of the stuff he says, I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, where did this dude get that?
This is just 2 days ago. 2 days ago, Conway the Machine revealed he's officially off Griselda in addition to Eminem Shady Records. And he has a new album coming. He's an independent artist. He was on Matter of fact, you can shout out to this kid too, because this kid does good interviews, and like, while he gets very good guests and shit, you don't really hear his name mentioned with some of the great interviews out there, but Bootleg Kev, that's about a lot of love for Bootleg Kev. But,
absolutely.
The Bootleg Kev podcast, it was released on Friday, February 18th, and Comedy Machine explained how for the first time in his career, the only label he is currently signed to is his own, Drum Work Imprint, following the end of his contract with Griselda and Shady Records. So, and he said, yeah, Drum Work, I mean, as of right now. So, maybe he'll sign somewhere else, but for now, he's no longer Griselda. Now, I don't know what that means as far as, like, the label goes. Would there still be maybe a Griselda as a group? But I don't know, like, who knows, man? Like, it's not that those guys stopped making music together just because, like, that was a, homegrown group. They weren't, like, put together by the industry or nothing. You know what I mean? Like, they grew up together and so kind of,
well, they're family. I'm going to tell you something about that, though. When we look at situations in terms of entrepreneurship, especially in the industry, Pat, you are just as much of a scholar, if not more so, than both of us in terms of knowing the stuff you know. So you understand how many artists over the years have gone out trying to do their own label and how many, because they wanted a situation that they felt like it was all them. They wanted to show that they could do it themselves. You know, Fat Joe had Terror Squad Records. You know, Snoop Dogg, you know, he went out with Yardie Style Records back in the day. I mean, Waka Flocka, with Brick Squad Monopoly, which was under Gucci, but you're seeing a lot of artists who want to get out there and do it on their own. And that is like the ultimate testament to really validating your career, showing that while you have somebody give you a springboard, that you are able to navigate your own path, which I think is great, because I'm always going to tell anybody, if you got a dream, follow it. Just make sure you're following through the correct way.
This is a very crucial time for Conway now. He's going to face pressure that he's never faced before. Because now that he's not with Griselda and Shady and everybody, and, with Benny moving to Def Jam and making a lot of noise and stuff, so now he's going to be compared to those guys and shit. So, the next time he comes, he's going to have to bring it, man. You know what I mean? He's going to have to do something. Like, if he can put out something that people don't really feel, man, that can set him back very far. Because, if he puts out something that's not that great, he'll be like, you see, never left Griselda, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people are like, you know how this shit is, man. Like, build you up to tear you down. They'll jump on him in a heartbeat if he doesn't put out an A-plus effort the next time out. You know what I mean? Like, how these fucking fans are, man. And it's not fair, but that's just how it is. You know what I mean? One time I said something in Jay Hood from the Deep Block, he laughed and he was like, man, I think that's the most genius shit I ever heard. I said, my favorite music is rap music. My least favorite music is rap music. And that's the fucking truth, man. Like, I love this shit and I fucking hate it at the same time, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the truth, though, man. Like, you see how, like, these fans, man, like, they're crazy sometimes, bro. And, like, the minute somebody does something, puts out something that isn't A-plus, oh, they're trash. They fell off. And it's like, man, who you saying this dude was top 10 last year, man? And now he puts out something that might not be as good, and we're just saying he's trash, but that's how it is, man. Like, and it's just so crazy, bro. Like, it's just, I don't know, man. I hope things work out for Conway, and I think they will, because I think Conway is very talented, and I think he makes great music as well. You know what I mean? Like, he's not just bars. I think he can make great music as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think he has it in him. He done built a lot of the right connections.
Mm-hmm.
He can do a whole lot.
I mean, if you have a label right now and you're looking for somebody strong to sign to your label, man, then how could you ask for a better dude than Conway? If I'm running the label right now and I need a big name to get on my team, man, I'm approaching Conway. Why not? You know what I mean? Like, the reward is way better than the risk. I mean, you know, you're taking someone that has proved to be a great artist. Why wouldn't you take a chance on him? And I think that he'll find a home. I hope he goes somewhere that lets him do what he does. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the tricky thing about it, because you have to be, you know, one thing about it is, you know, you – having that backing is important from a perspective of who really believes in your vision. Like you said, Conway is an exceptional artist on his own, and he has a respect, you know, but he is identified primarily through Griselda. You know, that's how a lot of people know him. So the thing is, essentially now he's going out there from a perspective of he's essentially a solo act with no – I don't want to say no backing, because I think his family will always back him, but it's like he's identified now as he's got to be the guy. Can he really do it on his own in that capacity?
Yeah, I just hope the fans don't create some kind of beef with him and he's gone and been in here. You know what I mean? Like, I hope there's none of that shit. I hope it's just, you know, they went their separate ways, business-wise, and I hope to do the best for him, man, because I was kind of early on the Conway thing. Like, I kind of knew him early because I had interviewed this dude from New York, Brooklyn, his name's Bub Styles. And he was just a dude that, like, I heard on, I just stumbled upon his shit on YouTube trying to find something else. And the dude was fucking crazy. And I was like, man, I'm going to find this dude. And I found him and interviewed him. And he didn't have much of a following. I don't think he has a following now either. And he was just dope. Well, that's how I heard of Conway, was just finding that dude. He had a song with Conway. And then by the time the interview came, I like, oh, shit, like, this dude actually already has a little bit of a following. And then, like, 2-3 years later, they were pretty well known and they were getting signed and all that shit, you know what I mean? But I didn't really know Benny and shit yet, but I knew Conway, so I found what I've done as well, you know what I mean? But yeah, I really hope that everything works out for him. And I think it will, though. You know what I mean? Like, if you had bet money, things are going to be all right for Conway, the smart bet I think would be yes. You know what I mean? But it's going to be an interesting time for him, though, man. That's for sure.
Well, it's all about, entrepreneurship, like I said, is a beautiful thing. You just want to know, no matter what you're doing, whether you are doing music, whether you're a chef, whether you're a carpenter, because the fact is, you know what you can do. And, you know, anything is defined by your quality. That is your clientele base in terms of how the work that you do. So music is a lot trickier because it's such a discriminating base. It is a specific base. You have your people that like you, and if they really, really like you, they're going to like you no matter. It's like with Jay-Z. If Jay-Z drops an album tomorrow, he's going to sell. If Nas drops another album tomorrow, he's going to sell. You know, if Ghostface drops an album, it's going to get notoriety. He's going to sell. All of them are going to sell. Mm-hmm. Some may sell more than others, but all of them have a base that they're going to have where everybody's going to get it. I mean, and that's because they've accumulated work where they rightfully have that respect and that cachet. You know, Griselda is a different breed of hip-hop because if you are older, you still love the craft, you still love the culture, because I don't care how old you are, you can still love it. Griselda is something that if you're really into Griselda, like we all are, you're really into Griselda. You're going to listen to them no matter what, you know. But it's also really trying, you know, but Conway's situation now is he's really got to get himself out there on a level to a whole nother audience in terms of really people identifying with him as a solo, you know, and that means really reaching out to the youth.
One thing that he has is that he doesn't have is he doesn't have like a platinum album under his belt or anything. So there's, I think a lot of people, I think like the verdict is still out there for him in the sense that not as he's good or not, I mean, it's clear that he is, but as far as taking that next step, I don't think he fully took it. And now he's independent again. So, like, this next step is a very crucial one to him because, like I said, he was about to be there. At least we all thought so anyway. But then now that he's back down before we, I don't think he's, like, fully took that step. And now that he's back down, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, let's hope things work out for him, man.
Well, he one thing about it, we haven't heard any drama. We've just heard he decided to step out of a free agent. They all have money because they all were successful as a group. You know, merchandising, they are, I mean, money-wise, they're all millionaires. They're all multimillionaires. So money is not going to be a problem. I don't think money is a problem. I think it's just about having, you know, being able to move when you want to move, do what you want to do. You know, he may have some ideas that are beyond Griselda in terms of what he wants to express, which is totally fine. We'll all support him because we're all fans of his. We'll support him. We know the music is always going to be fire. You know, an MC of Conway's caliber is always loaded. You're never going to hear him spit a whack verse ever. You know, I think Griselda is one of the few groups I've ever heard where I've never heard any of them spit a bad verse. All those guys, they just say shit, and it's like,
there's a lot. You know what I mean? Like, they're always going to spit high caliber shit. They're hip hop, man. You know what I mean? They're all three of them are great. I mean, really, as you go down the line, obviously, there's more people signed. You see, Boldy James is great. RJ Payne is great, great. That dude is something.
He's going to be the next one. He's going to be the next
battle rapper. He could be. He used to be a battle rapper. His name was Rain Man back in the day. And I've known that dude for a long time because I've always followed battle rap. First time I heard RJ Payne, I didn't even realize it was him until I saw him. You know, I was like, oh, shit, that's me. So, you know what I mean? I didn't realize until I actually saw him. But he keeps catching the eye of people on shit, too. So, like, all those guys are something special, and I think this is sky's the limit for those guys. I think they all have crazy potential and, you know, for all the different people like Mark Conley and everybody in that, I think that they all could spring out on their own and have their own success, or they could do it all together, however. But I think they're all, of course, they're great as a group, but I think they're all great as solo artists as well.
That's true.
Yeah, I see potential greatness, man. Especially with RJ Payne, he is killing it right now.
Yeah, he's making a lot of noise, man. I saw, like, he won some kind of, like, you know, Lyricist of the Year or something like that. But, yeah, he's something special, man, for real. He's going to, you know, people are starting to notice him a little more and more and shit. And, yeah, he's dope, man. I would love to hear one of those dudes do, like, a complete album with another, like, with somebody from back in the day, you know what I mean? Because everybody like compares Griselda to the Lox and shit. I don't want to hear like the whole group do it. I just want to hear, you know, like RJ Payne and Beanie Siegel or Conway and Beanie Siegel do a project together, or Jadakiss and Benny or somebody. You know what I mean? Like I think that'd be a cool move for them, because then the old heads, like, they'd get the attention of all the old heads. And then, like, the new dudes would be like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? I just think it would bring so much for everybody, and it would just be something cool for us to do. I don't know. I love seeing that type of shit. Like how Currency and Freddie Gibbs did that album with The Alchemist together. And Currency just dropped his third album with The Alchemist last week. I just love when they all work together and drop projects and shit. But, like, that's a thing that I hope never phases out. I love that we get those. Back in the day, we would always hear about shit was supposed to happen. And, you know, Fat Joe and Biggie were supposed to have an album. Jay and Biggie and Charlie Baltimore were supposed to do that album. And shit just never happened, man. I think labels got involved and all that. You know what I mean? But nowadays, you can do that shit. You know, it don't matter if your label don't like it. You can put it out for free. You know what I mean? So I love the fact that we're getting a lot more collaborations and shit.
Yeah, and that is a dope. That is dope. You know, my thing is to do it yourself. That's all.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, man, we about to sign
you know,
out.
Man,
for
I think,
short. It was a dope
deal.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I kind of got to get rolling. I think Royal Flush is, he got stepping. But, hey, he gave us a pretty cool interview, though, man. Like, I don't know what happened before I came on the line, but it seemed like it was going well. And,
yeah, it was a dope deal.
New York,
I think probably a phone issue, but I hit him and told him, man, thank you for joining us. Definitely looking forward to next time, you know what I mean? So,
hell yeah. I always hit the New York and New Orleans dudes, man. They talk, man. They give us some good shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
man. I stay in New York and New Orleans, man, and they know how to bring it, man. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, man, I'm going to go ahead and sign off of here, really well. Thanks again, man. Thanks for holding it down while I was late. But I appreciate y'all, and we'll be back on here soon, man.
Yeah, we're going to have lined up for partners, so...
Yes, sir.
Let's keep this marathon going.
All right, y'all take it easy. Y'all be safe, and I'll be in touch for sure.
All right.
Definitely, yeah.
All right,
peace. Peace.